0.01 Bitcoin will buy you a house. Today it sounds ridiculous, but in the future, I think this conversation is going to age extremely well. You're going to be able to buy their house with that $900 investment. That breaks people's minds. They just can't grasp that concept. They can't grasp it. You don't need to go all in. You don't have to go all in Bitcoin. In 30 years, let's say when Bitcoin is worth $10 million, $20 million, $50 million, whatever it is, I have no idea. At that point, you're not going to be concerned with whether you bought Bitcoin at 90,000 versus 92,000 versus 85,000. You're not going to care. What you're going to care about is the nominal amount of Bitcoin you have. That's the only thing that's going to matter. If you have one Bitcoin in 30 years, if it's worth, let's say, $50 million, you're not going to wonder, oh, why didn't I wait to buy? Why didn't I wait until it dropped to 40K to buy? You're not going to be thinking that. What you're going to be thinking about is...
What's up, guys? 70,000 of you guys keep coming back every single month, but 71% are not subscribed. So you're going to miss out on some of the great Green Candle content. So make sure that you're hitting that subscribe button with the bell notification so you get notified every time I drop a video. All right, now let's get back into this great interview.
Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, Rajat Soni in the house for round two. But Rajat, now that Bitcoin's price is absolutely plummeting and crashing and burning, as we were saying a little bit pre-show, I want to revisit a topic that you have hammered so much throughout your videos and your great channel about owning 0.1 Bitcoin. Now that is under $10,000, but why do you think that it's so important to change the framing on owning just a fraction of a Bitcoin instead of trying to stress to get to one full Bitcoin?
So I think a lot of people, they see, let's say, $100,000 for a Bitcoin and or $90,000 now, and they kind of stress out and they think, oh, it's not doable. I can't get to one whole Bitcoin, so I'm not even going to try. But the people who own one Bitcoin are going to be like unicorns, right? You're not going to see many people who own one Bitcoin. You're not going to see really, I mean, if in real life you meet maybe five people your entire life who have one Bitcoin, that's probably going to be like special, right? But 0.1 Bitcoin is a lot more doable. So one Bitcoin, there's only 21 million Bitcoin in the entire world. Only 21 million people can simultaneously own one whole Bitcoin. But there are people like Michael Saylor who have been accumulating as much as they possibly can. BlackRock buying 800,000 Bitcoin. All these other institutions getting as much as they possibly can. But you can get to 0.1. 0.1 Bitcoin is right now $9,200. Again, that may seem like it's impossible, but if you were to accumulate, let's say, $100, $200, $300 a day, or not, sorry, a day, maybe a week or a month or every couple weeks, whatever you can do, if you can do that, you'll get to 0.1 Bitcoin pretty quickly. So 0.1 Bitcoin, if you run the numbers, 210 million people in the entire world can own 0.1 Bitcoin at the same time. So that gives you a much better chance of actually getting to that point. But again, I made a video about this, owning 0.1 Bitcoin will change your life. And one of the things that I've noticed is that a lot of people don't really see the value in 0.1 Bitcoin because today it seems so small, but at some point it's going to be worth a lot more. A lot more people are going to want Bitcoin. A lot more people are going to discover Bitcoin. They're going to figure out what it is, and they're going to know that this is the best money in the world. Nobody can debase it. Nobody can stop you from using it. Nobody can take it away from you without you giving them permission. So this is something that's actually going to change the entire world. If you can own 0.1 Bitcoin, let's say, for example, today it's worth $9,200. At the peak, it was worth $12,600. $9,200 today. You can buy 0.1 Bitcoin. At some point, one Bitcoin is going to be worth $1 million. Then at some point, it's going to be worth 10 million. Then it's going to be worth 100 million. It's going to keep rising because more and more dollars are being printed regularly, and those dollars can chase a finite number of Bitcoin. So the price of Bitcoin is going to rise forever. The amount of Bitcoin that you have, whatever Bitcoin you have, you're going to see that rise in value as well. Now, let's say Bitcoin goes to $1 million, your 0.1 Bitcoin is worth 100,000. Of course, you can't retire with that, but think about the possibilities there. If you have, let's say you have credit card debt, or you need to fix your roof. We wanted to talk about buy, borrow, die as well. That was something that we wanted to discuss. if you have 0.1 Bitcoin and it's worth 100 grand, you can easily go and take, let's say, a $5,000 loan against that. And you're very secure because you only have to use a very small portion of your stack as collateral. You only have to give a very small portion of your stack to your lender in order to get that $5,000 loan, which I think it puts you in a great position. So the reason why I say that is because, let's say, if you wanted to borrow money on a credit card, you're going to pay, what, 20, 25, 30%? If you go to a payday loan shop and you need $5,000 badly because you have to pay for something immediately, what are you going to pay, like 300% a year? Sometimes it's even more than that. So if you can borrow against your Bitcoin stack, you can get that $5,000 of liquidity, you're going to pay maybe, right now the rates are about 10, 12%. At some point they'll drop. I think that they're going to drop to, I'd say, high single digits, then mid, then low. Because to the lender, lending against Bitcoin is probably the least riskiest way of, I guess, lending money. The least risky collateral, because they get to hold the collateral. You have to send them the collateral. And then if your loan, let's say it goes to a certain LTV, it goes to an loan to value of 90% and they have to liquidate your asset to pay back your loan so they can be made whole, they can just sell your Bitcoin on the market. Bitcoin is the most liquid asset in the world. You can sell Bitcoin as quickly as you want to. On the other hand, let's say, for example, today real estate is what the world is built on. Today, borrowing is with real estate. Think about how difficult it would be for a lender to get that loan paid back if you default on it. How are they going to sell that house? They can't sell it immediately. Maybe they'll take like 3 months, 4 months to sell the house. And by that time, maybe the value of the house has dropped. They have no guarantees that they'll be able to have that loan paid back. And over time, let's say the house value decreases. It's not like it's marked to market. So to lenders, it's way more risky to lend money against real estate. So I think what's going to happen is, let's say you buy that 0.1 Bitcoin 10, 15, 20 years from now, it's worth $1 million. You can take on loans to pay for your life. You can sell some Bitcoin if you want to. So that 0.1 Bitcoin is something that nobody can debase. It's a fraction of this finite supply of money that nobody can change. Nobody can change the supply. Nobody can take it away from you. So owning that 0.1 Bitcoin, I mean, all those features, you can borrow against it. Nobody can take it away from you. Nobody can debase it. All of those features come together and it makes that 0.1 Bitcoin, I mean, it'll change your life, right? What I mean by that is it'll give you this confidence that you can pay for your expenses. I think one of the worst situations that you can be in is not being able to pay for just your everyday expenses. It's extremely stressful. And if you can get to that point where you can stack even small amounts every day, $1, $2, $5 every single day, eventually you'll have enough Bitcoin that at some point it'll buy you a house. It sounds crazy right now, but like the way that I see it, at some point, 0.1 Bitcoin will buy you a house. 0.01 Bitcoin will buy you a house. Today, it sounds ridiculous, but in the future, I think this conversation is going to age extremely well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's inevitable because, I mean, it just look at the numbers, right? Bitcoin is a public ledger. So, you know, I like to throw out some numbers about the number of wallets that have 0.01 Bitcoin and 0.1 Bitcoin. Right now, it's 14.3 million Bitcoin wallets have 0.01 Bitcoin or more, and just over 4 million have 0.1 Bitcoin or 10 million sats or more right now. And how many millionaires there are in the world? There's 62 million of those. So just to put it in perspective, it's more rare to own 0.1 Bitcoin or 0.01 Bitcoin, which is less than $1,000 today, than it is to be a millionaire. So I think that with all of this, we're still so early in the timeline. And, you know, we were talking a little bit pre-show about the daily price action. You know, obviously Bitcoin's crashing right now, and just over that 90,000 mark, and everybody's freaking out, right? I mean, I think the sentiment on Twitter is maybe the bull run's over, and I know you've done some recent videos on that as well. But I think regardless, either way, we're still extremely early because, like you're saying, do you think that the overall just person and traditional financial you know, people in general have understood the absolute scarcity of Bitcoin just yet, because I think that's the hardest thing for people to really wrap their head around when they're coming to Bitcoin. Because sure, all right, on surface level, it's scarce, but gold is scarce, but all of these other real estate is scarce. But when you compare it to those two assets, I think, you know, it's just, it means you don't understand Bitcoin just fully yet.
Yeah, we can find more gold. I think China recently, it was probably a couple months ago, where they said that they found a deposit of like 10% of the global supply of gold. Nobody can verify if it's real. What if it is real? It means that whatever gold you have is being debased by 9 to 10% because more gold is entering the market. The supply, the demand for gold is being fulfilled by the new supply that's being added to the market. And that's not something that can happen with Bitcoin. Again, with real estate, you can literally build new houses. You can pay somebody to build another house for you, but you can't do that with Bitcoin. Like, you can't go to a miner and say, hey, there's 21 million Bitcoin today. I want you to create 3 more Bitcoin and assign them to me. You can't do that. That's not possible. So with the pricing, what the way that I see it, a lot of people are panicking because maybe they have a significant amount of their wealth in Bitcoin already, and maybe they expect the value to go up forever, but that's not how wealth works. That's not how anything works, right? If you start a business, let's say your YouTube channel, my YouTube channel, it's not like we went straight up, right? Our subscriber numbers didn't go straight up. When you learn about something, it's not like you just learn it all on a linear scale. It takes time. Certain things you understand faster, other things you understand slower, and that's perfectly fine, but it all takes time. That's the most important thing. In the short term, there may be some volatility, and that's perfectly fine. I think one thing that I really want people to focus on is the nominal amount of Bitcoin that you have. Don't focus on the dollar value. Don't focus on what the value of the Bitcoin is. If the dollar value of Bitcoin goes down, that's great, because that means that you can accumulate more. So let's say, for example, if Bitcoin goes to $10,000 today, I'm going to be happy. I'm going to go try to buy a whole Bitcoin if I can. I'm going to take on loans if I can to buy multiple Bitcoin. I'm going to use that opportunity to get as much as I can. So if you have no Bitcoin and the price goes to $10,000 a coin, why wouldn't you see that as an opportunity to get as much as you possibly can? If you have that opportunity in front of you and you don't take advantage of it, then, I mean, you're not really doing yourself justice, because you're losing out on that opportunity. You're eventually going to have to get Bitcoin. If the price goes down, use it to your advantage and accumulate more so that the nominal amount of Bitcoin that you have increases, rather than panicking and selling what you have or ignoring it and telling people that they're stupid for even thinking about Bitcoin. Accumulate more, build up the nominal stack that you have. Build up, let's say if you have 0.01 Bitcoin today, make it your goal to get to 0.1 Bitcoin, because as the price goes down, it gets easier and easier for you to accumulate whatever goals you have. So let's say if your goal was to get to 1 Bitcoin, in the last month, it became 29% easier for you to get to that goal. So let's say you have 0.1 Bitcoin today, and that rest of that 0.9 Bitcoin would have cost you $115,000 or so. Now 0.9 Bitcoin will probably cost you $81,000. So instead of $120,000, it'll cost you $81,000. So use it to your advantage. That's the important thing here. Use the dips to your advantage so you can stack as much Bitcoin as you possibly can. Don't think too much about the price. The price is a distraction. The US dollar price of Bitcoin is irrelevant. It means nothing.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting, though, because it is almost the best orange pillar, so to speak. So I think even though, you know, I, the farther we get into Bitcoin, the less I check the price. And to be honest, I didn't really know what the price was today until I logged on to X.com, the everything app these days, and I saw everybody on Twitter just freaking out. And so, you know, how do we, I guess, shift the mindset of that? Is it going to take a long period of time? Is it pricing everything in Bitcoin? Is it looking at the potential opportunity cost? Or is it starting to count in sats? You know, how do we kind of shift that mentality? And then I want to parlay in that into a couple of questions, because you've had some issues with the CFA coming at you here recently, saying that, you know, and so I still think that it's interesting where, you know, when we put things in perspective, especially when we see these price dips, that's where I always come back to, is just looking at the sentiment on Twitter and looking at things that just happened to you. It's like, man, we are still so early. So if you can shed some light on that too, I'd love to hear your side on what all happened. But how do we make that shift and get to a place where people are thinking more in exactly like you're saying, like these dips as an opportunity opposed to, oh my God, Bitcoin's crashing and burning?
I think one of the things that people need to do is just dive in. If you're, let's say, for example, if I were to, let's say the 2022 crash, that's when I really started buying. Before that, I was buying small amounts. So my very first buy was for like $10. If I hadn't made that first buy, then I probably wouldn't have bought anything after FTX collapsed. Because the first buy is the most difficult. It's the one that gets you to really think about whether or not you want to do this, right? Once you get through that first buy, everything else seems a lot easier. I think the difficult part for most people is just wrapping their head around why they would do this, why they would give away their hard-earned cash for something that they can't even see. Like that's something that a lot of people think about. Oh, I can't even touch this Bitcoin thing. I can't use it for this or that. It has no intrinsic value. Getting over that is probably the hardest part, and then transferring your fiat into Bitcoin is probably one of the hardest parts as well. So I think what people need to do is just dive in head first. You're never going to learn everything about Bitcoin. You're never going to know everything about Bitcoin. Once you start making those buys, I think it forces you to study it more, forces you to learn a little bit more about it. You'll read more Bitcoin books. For example, I recently read, there's this book called Layered Money from Nick Bhatia, really good book. And even though I've been studying Bitcoin for like 4 years, there were concepts in that book that I didn't even understand before about the legacy financial system. And it really helped me to understand how Bitcoin will fit in to the legacy financial system. And then beyond that, how it'll replace the legacy financial system. So I think learning is the key here. Just learning as much as you can, put in the time to figure out what Bitcoin is, how it works, why it's something that can't be censored, why it's something that can't be stopped. That's probably the hardest part. As for the CFA, I think they're just trying to do their due diligence. They get a lot of complaints. I think I post a little bit too bullishly sometimes, but I mean, I don't think I'm too bullish. I think if anything, nobody's bullish enough, because most people can't comprehend where Bitcoin is going to take the world. They're doing their due diligence. They have to ask me these questions. So one of the things that they asked me about, so I actually got investigated by the CFA twice. The first time it was about me being too bullish, basically saying that Bitcoin's going to go to, so this is back when Bitcoin was at like 60K or something. I had made a post when it was around 30K that Bitcoin is going to 100K, then it's going to 1 million, it's going to 10 million, it's going to 100 million and beyond. And then I explained why. I went through the entire process, the bid and ask, prices determined at the margin, all of that. And I guess somebody was offended by that and they complained. So the CFA Institute looked into me and I made a video just explaining the entire thing, what happened. I almost lost the CFA at that time, but I explained my way through it. I mean, they asked me why I don't have disclaimers in every single one of my tweets. For some reason, and I asked them, do you expect disclaimers from people who are promoting the stock market? And I think that kind of took them back, and they zoomed out and they thought about, why are we expecting him to do this when we don't expect other CFA charter holders to do it? I'm probably one of the only CFA charter holders who's just outright telling people, sell your real estate, sell your stocks for Bitcoin, because I've put in the time to understand the legacy financial system and Bitcoin. Most CFA charter holders, they haven't done that for whatever reason. I think some of them are just, I mean, it's mean to say, but I think some of them are just NPCs. They just read what they read and then they stick to it, right? They don't put in the time to dive any deeper.
What if I told you you never had to sell your Bitcoin? Instead, you can borrow against it with Salt Lending. Why give up your hard-earned Bitcoin when you can unlock its value without letting it go? With Salt, you get secure Bitcoin collateralized loans with no credit checks, no prepayment fees, and best of all, no rehypothecation. Salt has had zero customer collateral losses since it launched.
Salt was the first platform to offer Bitcoin collateralized loans starting way back in 2016. Today, they offer tailored options for both individuals and businesses. And now introducing Salt Shield, the no liquidation solution. No forced liquidations during the lifetime of your loan when you're enrolled with Salt Shield. This just launched at the Bitcoin conference in Las Vegas, and it is next level peace of mind. For Green Candle listeners only, head to saltlending.com/green-candle for this exclusive offer for your Bitcoin collateralized loan. You can get cash for your Bitcoin today. Salt Lending, secure, trusted, proven.
For whatever reason, I think some of them are just, I mean, it's mean to say, but I think some of them are just NPCs. They just read what they read and then they stick to it, right? They don't put in the time to dive any deeper. I'm not saying that the CFA charter holders are all like that, but a lot of them are, because after they studied the legacy financial system, they can't see the world apart from the legacy financial system. They can't see the world with no debt. Instead, they're promoting more debt and they want more debt. So this time, the CFA Institute came after me for saying that Bitcoin is essentially risk-free. And I do truly believe that, because if you hold on for a long enough term, Bitcoin has never given you a negative return. And I think that that's going to continue to happen. Bitcoin is the only asset that has a finite supply, a supply that's verifiable on chain. Nothing else has that. So let's say stocks. How are you going to confirm that more shares aren't being created behind your back? You can ask somebody who has a Bloomberg terminal to check, but how are they going to confirm that? How do they know that? Nobody really knows. How do you know how much gold exists? You have no idea. How do you know how many houses will exist next year, 10 years from now? How do you know even how many houses exist today? No idea. Even the Federal Reserve has no idea how many dollars exist. So the way that I see it, because Bitcoin has this finite supply, it'll continue to go up in value, because like I said, more dollars will continue to chase the same amount of Bitcoin over time. Bitcoin is trying to replace fiat as money. It's trying to replace real estate as a store of value. It's trying to replace stocks as a store of value. And I think that because all of these things are so inferior to Bitcoin, to me, Bitcoin is risk-free. And I explained my way through it and I told them, hey, this, and this. And they concluded their investigation.
There you go. So now they agree that Bitcoin is risk-free. Is that what I'm hearing? I'm just kidding. You don't have to put words in their mouth.
I wouldn't necessarily say that. I think they just didn't know how to respond.
Yeah, I got you. But I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, I agree with you. The way that I kind of have flipped it in my own head is that, you know, we know 450 Bitcoin are going to be mined every single day at this point, right? And then we know the next halving, that's going to be cut in half. And the underlying dollars or whatever you're pricing in, maybe CAD or, you know, rupees or Chinese yuan or whatever it is, whatever you're trying to price the overall dollar or the overall Bitcoin exchange rate is, at the end of the day, one Bitcoin is one Bitcoin. And we know that the volatility is just the underlying currency, whether it's interest rates or whatever that's kind of changing that dollar exchange rate. At the end of the day, one Bitcoin is one Bitcoin. So, you know, I know you talk a lot about, you know, Bitcoin in retirement. I do the same as well. And I think that what you're lining out here, you know, one, do you think you could live off of Bitcoin right now if you have, you know, maybe a significant stack? And if not, you know, why? But and then the follow-up question to that would be, you know, with the retirement aspect of Bitcoin, because, you know, of the longevity of it, do you think that that has fully ingrained itself into retirement accounts? And are we there yet where people are looking at Bitcoin fully as their retirement accounts?
People definitely aren't looking at it as that. They're seeing it as a speculative asset that goes up and comes down. And the volatility definitely doesn't help with that narrative. People want stability, but there's no real stability in the world. Even the dollar isn't stable. Nothing is stable because you don't know what's going to happen in the future. There's so much entropy in the world. There's so many unexpected events that can happen. The dollar has lost like 99% of its value in the last, not even 100 years. In terms of gold, it's lost that much value. In terms of Bitcoin, it just keeps losing value over and over again, and it'll keep losing value. So what I mean by that is that in 1933, 1 ounce of gold was worth like $20.75. Today, 1 ounce of gold is worth like $4,100, something ridiculous, right? So it's lost 99.5% of its value in less than 100 years. So people think that, oh, the dollar is stable. It's really not. In the short term, it seems stable, but in reality, you're losing a certain amount of your purchasing power every single day, and that'll continue to happen. So that's the first thing. I do think that you can live off your Bitcoin because you can exchange your Bitcoin for dollars. Today, the world is predominantly using dollars, and that's perfectly fine. But you can get more dollars with your Bitcoin, and this is it's the most liquid market in the world. The way that I see it, you do still need dollars at this point. And again, I made another video about this. All you need is Bitcoin and cash. You don't need real estate. You don't need stocks. You don't need anything else. Everything else is so volatile. All you need is a stash of cash, and then you can put the rest of it into Bitcoin. So let's say you have, I actually spoke with somebody who did a one-on-one meeting with me. He wanted to retire soon. He had, I don't remember the exact numbers, but he had a certain amount of Bitcoin, and he wanted to get his wife to retire. He wanted to have his wife just do whatever she wants to. She had the freedom to do what she wanted to. And he wanted some stability. His wife wanted some stability as well. So what I recommended to him, and he was really happy to do, is he ran the numbers for himself. I didn't tell him to do it. He wanted to do it himself. So I told him 20% cash, 80% Bitcoin. And it worked. He's giving me updates. It's working out really well for him. He likes it because he has a 20% in cash and he's still working his job. So that 20% in cash is almost like a hedge for him losing his job or for Bitcoin going down. And he continues to stack as much Bitcoin as he wants to with his job. His wife continued to work. She's still working. They already converted their portfolio into 2080 and they're doing really well.
Yeah, I mean, even right now, they're probably buying the dip. So, I mean, probably loading up so his wife could potentially retire at some point next year in 26. Now, you know, with the development of this market, right, with the short-term volatility, you know, obviously it doesn't help for the retirement aspect, even though if you look at 401ks and all these other things, you know, the stock market, it's all crashing right now. Everybody's saying tariffs this, tariffs that, you know, that the overall market just isn't doing super well. And even though, you know, Bitcoin crashing doesn't necessarily help with all of that, you know, how easy of a conversation was it to convert them to just be like, hey, you know what, actually, let's drop everything else and just go 80% Bitcoin, 20% cash? Or was it a difficult conversation? Because it sounds like it was easy to just convert them. Like, why do you need all these other things that are underperforming Bitcoin?
I mean, I had to explain to them what's happening. So they had a real estate portfolio before, and they had some stocks before. They had some index funds. And I asked him, why do you have these stocks? He really didn't know. He just thought, okay, this is, it's going to give me a cash flow. It's going to do this. It's going to do that. And then I explained it to him that these stocks are going to massively underperform against your Bitcoin. So why would you want to hold stocks? So he previously had a very small allocation to cash. It was like 3%. And I told him, if you want the stability, so I think the main reason why people buy, let's say, index funds is because they expect them to be stable. They buy real estate because they expect that, oh, we're always going to need shelter. There's always going to be somebody who's willing to rent from me. I think those are the main reasons that we need cash flow, all that. But if you just have cash and you have the best performing asset, so you have the least volatile asset, cash is still volatile. It's still volatile to the downside. It's going to go up. It's going to go down no matter what. Since 2025, the US dollar, no matter what the government says, no matter what the Bureau of Labor Statistics says, I don't care what they say, the Federal Reserve, I don't care what they say. They say that inflation is 2%, but no. Since 2020, I think the US dollar has probably lost like 30 to 40% of its purchasing power. If you're really buying things, let's say you're buying food, you're going to go to the grocery store, you're going to pay double. If you have to pay for your insurance, you're probably paying double at this point. In Canada, it's terrible. So one example that I can give you is ground beef. So there used to be this grass-fed organic ground beef at Costco. It used to be, I think, $24.99 for 4 pounds. And now it's $39.99 in 4 years. So it's up like 60% in that time. And they're telling you that inflation is 2% a year. That's crazy to me. That's wild. So if the US dollar has already lost that value, and I explained that to them, then why would you want to continue earning assets, or why would you want to continue holding assets that give you more US dollars? Why not hold something that gives you whatever you want to? And in this case, so the S&P 500 has lost 99% of its value in terms of Bitcoin. Gold has lost 99% of its value in terms of Bitcoin. In the short term, it's gone up, but over the long term, it only goes down. What else? Real estate. Real estate has gone down massively in terms of Bitcoin, and it'll continue to go down. You can literally build more houses if you want to. Your house isn't unique. Whatever house you have can be replaced with another unit of shelter. Houses are shelter. They're not savings vehicles. And this is something that traps a lot of people. People think that because house prices go up in dollars, they're going to go up forever. But if you price them in Bitcoin, they're going to go down forever. And that's exactly what's happening. So today, a house might cost you 3 Bitcoin or 4 Bitcoin, whatever. At some point, it'll cost you 0.5, 0.1, 0.01. It'll keep decreasing forever. And I've had a lot of people who actually sold their rental properties after talking to me because they see the value in Bitcoin. Why would you want to hold on to something like real estate? Why would you want to hold on to it if you know that it's going to decrease in value over time? I had somebody who, this is a completely different person. He was a doctor. He was a surgeon of some kind. He had 15 rental properties and he sold 10 rental properties after talking to me, which is crazy, right? That's wild to me. But he made the decision himself. So back to these people, they had stocks. I believe they had a rental. I don't remember. They may have had a rental property, but they got rid of everything because it just made more sense to hold Bitcoin in cash. You have the volatility with Bitcoin and you have the stability with cash. If you don't want stability in your portfolio, you're not going to go anywhere. You just put your money in a bank account and you watch that purchasing power just dwindle away forever. That's all that's going to happen. You need volatility in your portfolio. If you only have stability, then your portfolio is trending to zero in real terms. So I explained that to them. I mean, I think they got it pretty easily. They were okay with the volatility. They already had Bitcoin in the first place. They already had some. So they were pretty okay with switching over to having more Bitcoin and less real estate in stocks. Because, I mean, think about it. Having a rental property is like a part-time job. Somebody calls you at night, you have to go plunge their toilet. You have to go replace their toilet. You have to do this and that. You have to fix their furnace. You have to call a contractor. You have to do all of that. Whereas with Bitcoin, you just hold on to it and you do nothing. There's no maintenance and repairs. There's no realtor fees. There's no lawyers. There's no property taxes. None of that applies to Bitcoin. So to them, it was a no-brainer.
Last bull run, we had exchanges blow up. You saw FTX, Celsius, BlockFi, you name it. But the true power of Bitcoin is getting it off an exchange into cold storage. This bull run, I'm trusting Trezor, the company that's been around for over a decade, and they just had a brand new release of the best hardware wallet in the game, the Trezor Safe 7. It's got the first audible secure element. No other hardware wallet has this. On top of it, I travel a lot, so I need an easy way to connect my Bitcoin hardware wallet to my laptop, phone, what have you. Therefore, it is the easiest way and has the best connectivity to access your Bitcoin. This is truly how you become your own bank, and the best way to do that is with a Trezor Safe 7. So you could go to the affiliate link down below and get yourself one right now, and do it quickly because they are flying off the shelves, folks. So do it with the easiest and best way to get your Bitcoin off exchanges. So go to the affiliate link down below, get yourself a Trezor Safe 7, and get your Bitcoin off exchanges in the easiest way possible. All right, enough for me. Let's get back to the show.
Yeah, and I mean, I think like to everybody, it's going to become a no-brainer eventually. But the interesting part is it's just, you know, like you said, like I still think it hasn't clicked to a lot of people, but we're potentially going to get there. I mean, as we see more Bitcoin adoption coming in, I mean, it's being adopted on a faster curve than the internet, as Bitcoiners love to point out. And, you know, I think that just the value proposition of just owning Bitcoin, even if it's just something as little as 0.1 Bitcoin, I think that that's going to change the perspective. But you know, when it comes to the adoption cycle and how we see this short-term price action, I'm going to revert back to that. You know, what do you think is going on right now? And do you take any account into this when you have any I guess people kind of talking to you for what some consulting services on this, are they asking you and you're trying to explain, hey, it's the short-term price action because of this? How do you approach that question?
I mean, I tell them, I always tell people that if you want to buy Bitcoin, you need to have a 4-year time horizon. If you're going to buy Bitcoin with your rent money, you're doing it wrong. You can't buy Bitcoin if you need the money in, let's say, a month, 2 months, 3 months. Even if you need the money in 3 years, you could potentially be risking your savings and you could lose everything. So minimum 4-year time horizon, of course, that could increase over time, that could decrease, that could change. However the cycles work out, it seems like institutional investors are kind of changing that cycle. I don't know exactly where the cycle is going to go. For all we know, 4-year cycles are over. Maybe we have, let's say, 1-year cycles where the price goes up, it shoots up, and then it goes consolidates for the rest of the year. And then it shoots up the following year, and then it consolidates for the rest of the year. And it keeps doing that over and over again. I think understanding that is the key. As for what's happening right now, I mean, there's so many different factors. There's tariffs. People blame that. People blame the core versus knots debate. And I don't know. I'm not an expert on that at all, so I can't really tell you where things are going because of that. I think the main thing that people need to take away from here is, though, that it's a mismatch in supply and demand. That's what changes the price. So if there's more Bitcoin available to be bought than the amount of Bitcoin that's demanded, the price will go down because the people who have that Bitcoin and they want to sell, maybe they need the money right away. Maybe they need the US dollars right away and they panic to sell it ASAP. They think that the price is going to keep going down. So they sell it ASAP. They just get rid of it at whatever price. You see a fire sale, price goes down. The people who are buying are at an advantage. The people who are selling are at a disadvantage. That's the main thing. Because Bitcoin has a finite supply, because it has that inelastic supply that nobody can change, if more people want Bitcoin, then they have to buy from the people who already own it. If the people who already own it don't want to sell at the current price, they have to, the potential buyers have to offer more and more dollars for that Bitcoin. And that's exactly why you see the prices going up over time. You see the price go from $0 to $1 to $10 to $100 to $1,000 to $100,000. And then eventually it'll keep going up and up and up. It'll go to a million, it'll go to 10 million. I mean, people think that even $1 million per Bitcoin is ridiculous, but I think it's going to go to a billion plus because the US dollar is truly worthless. That's going to take time. It's not going to happen overnight. For all we know, it could happen by, let's say, 2050. The entire world adopts Bitcoin, but I don't know if that's going to happen. But I mean, again, it's all supply and demand. If more sellers, if there's more Bitcoin available to be bought than the amount of Bitcoin demanded, price will go down. If there's more Bitcoin demanded than the amount available to be bought, price will go up.
Now, what do you think with the U.S. government basically just printing away? Do you think that there's do you explain that we're potentially in a debt spiral with the current, debt obligations and all of that? Or does the current macro environment, once you see the light of Bitcoin, just not really interest you anymore?
I think you need to pay attention to the current environment because you're part of it. But I think at the end of the day, Bitcoin doesn't really care. I mean, people still trade it as a risk asset. And that's perfectly fine. That's why it's going up and down with the NASDAQ. It's going up and down with the S&P 500. It's still correlated. But at some point, people are going to see that it's not a risk asset anymore. It's more like gold than anything else, right? It doesn't produce anything. And that's actually a good thing because there's no product there's no product to go down. Nobody can create a competing product. There's no company behind it. There's no management behind it. And I think that's actually a feature and not a bug. Because it means that no individual can change Bitcoin. No individual can, let's say, create a different product like they do with companies. No individual can create a different product and potentially sell it into the market and decrease Bitcoin's value. So the way that I see it, I mean, people are going to see it as a risk-free asset in the future. Even BlackRock sees it as a safe haven asset, right? If BlackRock is seeing it as that and retail investors are disagreeing, then I don't really want to be on the side of retail investors. I want to be on the side of BlackRock.
The debasement trade, dude. That's what they're calling it these days. They're lumping it in with gold. So I think the narrative in TradFi is starting to change, which is very interesting, especially starting to see the banking industry and everybody else coming in that way. I think it's interesting with your, you know, CFA license and kind of pairing that with, you know, seeing TradFi start to come in, because it seems like from at least maybe from the Canadian perspective, and I'd love to hear your insights on this, that there's not a whole lot of, I guess, traditional financial people that are still in Bitcoin. And I think the narrative of this cycle has been that, oh, TradFi is here, the big money's here. But I think if you really break it down to brass tacks, like the average family office isn't really selling their clients Bitcoin or encouraging them to buy Bitcoin. I think there's very few traditional financial firms that are really here yet. And retail is still kind of quieted down here this cycle. So I'm curious kind of just from your personal experience, where you think we are and if, you know, everybody that I'm just listing, if they're actually here this cycle.
I think we're super early. Most CFAs are still arguing that, oh, this thing's going to zero. I get a lot of pushback from people saying, oh, how can you possibly be a CFA if you're promoting this thing? It's just people don't, I don't think most people understand it yet. And I think this thing is, it's going to take some time. You can't just expect people to want to use this asset right away. It has to be deeply ingrained in society before most people will accept it. Most people are not early adopters. And I think this is partly, I actually have a tweet that I want to share with people here. This is why Bitcoin is the greatest wealth transfer of all time. If you could share my screen there. I think this is partly why Bitcoin is the greatest wealth transfer of all time. It's people who are ignoring Bitcoin losing their wealth, and that wealth is moving to people who are Bitcoiners. So let's say me and you, for example, we hold Bitcoin. At some point, like I said, so today a house costs, let's say, 3 to 5 Bitcoin. The people who sell their houses for Bitcoin are getting that 3 to 5 Bitcoin, or they're getting whatever they get after their mortgage is paid off. At some point, that same house will only sell for 0.1 Bitcoin. So after your mortgage is paid off, maybe you'll get 0.05 Bitcoin. So what's happening here is, in the legacy financial system, people see, let's say, stocks and real estate as a, they see stocks and real estate as wealth. But in the new financial system, stocks and real estate aren't wealth. If you want to buy them, you can. But I think Bitcoin is the only true wealth at this point. As people figure this out, a great chart here, as people figure it out, they're going to see that in terms of Bitcoin, everything that they own just keeps decreasing and decreasing in value. Like people, like there's this guy named Keith Weiner on YouTube. There's Peter Schiff. There's Henrik Zeberg, I think his name is. All these people, I have a list of people. I've been taking receipts from a lot of bears these last few days because I want to expose them as people who have no clue what they're talking about. Their wealth is being transferred to people who own Bitcoin. So let's say you're a 20-year-old right now. You can only afford 0.01 Bitcoin. You put $1,000 into that, whereas let's say your friend buys a rental property and they put down 20%, they have a mortgage. In 50 years, that rental property is going to probably be worth less than 0.01 Bitcoin. Your 0.01 Bitcoin, you bought that 0.01 Bitcoin for $900 and you got to enjoy your life with the rest of your money, while this other person who bought the rental property, they bought that house, they had to put upfront capital into the house first of all.
One of my absolute favorite things about Bitcoin is meeting all of you in person. So mark your calendars for February 28th and come down to where I've called home for the past 8 years, Tampa, Florida. The Bitcoin Bay Foundation is putting on the Sound Money Soiree. It's the third annual. It's a night of Bitcoin, poker, an open bar, and a silent auction. All support will go to Bitcoin Bay, a nonprofit that is creating a circular economy down in Tampa Bay, Florida. They're doing absolutely great things, and it's the Bitcoin community that I've called home for such a long time, and these guys are absolutely crushing it. So please do anything you can to support. Buy your tickets today. You can use promo code GREENCANDLE to get 10% off your Sound Money Soiree tickets.
So do you know anything about Bitcoin?
No.
You guys can come down and see this ugly mug. Come boogie on the dance floor, shake it, and now that Bitcoin's over 100K, you can do it all with your girlfriends. All right, enough from me. Let's get back to the show.
Bro. and you got to enjoy your life with the rest of your money, while this other person who bought the rental property, they bought that house, they had to put upfront capital into the house, first of all, and then they had to keep paying their mortgage for the next 30, 40, 50 years. You're going to be able to buy their house with that $900 investment. That breaks people's minds. They just can't grasp that concept. They can't grasp something digital, something being, they call it thin air. They can't grasp that thing being able to buy real goods. And I think that's going to be the paradigm shift that really changes the next decade of investors.
Yeah, the digital scarcity, like I said, I just still think like people just don't understand it because we've never really truly had something that scarce ever, right? I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's just kind of, they use the term hard assets. And I'm using the air quotes here because, you know, gold, like you said, like China has found gold, and just randomly, you know, El Salvador, I think, was rumored to have billions of dollars of unmined gold, you know, somewhere. And then, you know, we've got the Winklevoss twins telling Dave Portnoy at one point in time that Elon's going to mine gold off of asteroids. So there's always been all these crazy stories about how, you know, new gold can just magically appear. Of course, we know you can build houses, but, you know, I think previously, like the slowness of real estate was a benefit, right? Like, you can't really sell it that quickly. So like, you're not as attuned to buy, sell, do all these different things. But I think, you know, when you really take a step back and look at the benefit of Bitcoin, just being that pristine collateral, kind of reverting back to what you were talking about earlier, that market being 24/7, 365, as well as being fixed, I think is just probably the greatest invention of our lifetime. And I don't know if we'll ever see anything like that. And for people to kind of get over the hump and get to looking at Bitcoin as potentially, like you're saying, just getting a fraction of it, right? $900, $9,000 at this point, you know, that could drastically change your life over time. And so, you know, when you look at that, how are you, I guess, like encouraging people, or what are the best ways do you think that people are going about this strategy? Are you always kind of encouraging the DCA? Are you looking at the numbers of potentially trying to, you know, smash buy? How are some of these, I guess, accumulation strategies? Have you done the numbers on the differences here?
Yeah, definitely. So if Bitcoin grows at like if it grows, the same amount of dollars aren't going to buy the same amount of Bitcoin, right? Let's say, for example, if you DCA, let's say you DCA for the next 20 years, you buy $100 worth every month for, let me just do the calculation here quickly. So if you buy $100 worth every month for the next 20 years, times 12 times 20, that works out to 24 grand. In the next 20 years, you're probably going to get a lot less than 0.24 Bitcoin. But if you just smash buy $24,000 worth of Bitcoin today, you'll be able to get like 0.26 Bitcoin or something like that. If you DCA over time, you're probably going to get like 0.05. I don't know the exact numbers, but you'll get a lot less. So the way that I see it, I mean, you don't have to go all in on Bitcoin, but put in the time to understand it and put in the time to research it so that you can put money into it up front. The thing that I try to explain to people is you don't need to go all in. People think it's all or nothing. No, you don't have to do that. You don't do that with stocks. You don't do that with real estate. You don't do that with gold. You don't go all in on rental properties. You still have, let's say, stocks and real estate. But once you grasp Bitcoin as a concept, you don't want anything else. But in the beginning, you don't have to go all in on Bitcoin. It's perfectly fine not to. You can start with, let's say, 1% of your portfolio. Eventually, that 1% will be 10%, then it'll be 50%, then it'll be 99% of your portfolio, because that 1% is going to outpace everything else massively. I've done the numbers on this. Let's say you buy 1% of your portfolio in Bitcoin and then 99% in stocks. Stocks give you like a 7% return after inflation, and Bitcoin gives you, let's say, a 35% return after inflation. Today, that sounds ridiculous, but I do think that the US dollar can keep losing 35% per year in terms of Bitcoin for a very, very long time. So let's say that happens. In 20 years, your portfolio is going to be 60% Bitcoin and 40% stocks if you don't rebalance. If you just buy 1%, and 99%. It'll flip. You'll have majority of your portfolio in Bitcoin. And if you look at it from that perspective, you don't need to go all in on Bitcoin. You can go with 1%, 2%, 5%, 10%. The more you have, of course, the faster your portfolio will grow. But even if you go with a fraction of your portfolio in Bitcoin, you're going to do very well. I think that's what holds a lot of people back. They think of it as all or nothing. They think that, oh, I got to sell everything and buy Bitcoin with it. You don't have to do that. If you, let's say, for example, you have a stock portfolio, you have a real estate portfolio, leave that alone. Just keep it. I don't personally like that idea. I sold all my stocks for Bitcoin. I never had rental properties. But if you have that, leave it alone. Maybe that's your stability. Maybe that's what you want to keep. But having at least a little bit of Bitcoin will hedge your portfolio in case Bitcoin does become what we think it will. If you have no Bitcoin, you're in the worst position that you can be in. That's the probably the riskiest position that you can be in, having no Bitcoin. But having at least a little bit, you hedge yourself in case, let's say, 20 years from now, everybody has to work for Bitcoin and you're getting paid like 30 Satoshis an hour. Why not just buy, let's say, 3 million Satoshis today, if you can, if you have that money to afford it. Let's say 10 million Satoshis today, 0.1 Bitcoin. Why not just buy that today, if you can, rather than putting yourself through this situation where you have to work a part-time job, you have to work for minimum wage, which is a few Satoshis an hour, and that's the only thing that you can do for work. At some point, you're not going to be able to buy Bitcoin, so use this time where you can buy it to your advantage.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that that is, that's the interesting thing here is I think that people need to dip their toe in a little bit, but then once you dip your toe in and you start to see the price action, that's when the real FOMO sets in. And that's where I think, you know, that's when the FOMO starts to set in, that's when I think things get interesting. And, you know, I keep reverting back to the scarcity aspect of it. And I think that's when we'll potentially see that supply shock, just because everybody will start to realize, okay, you know what? We've got Bitcoin. There's 21 million. And as we were lining out at the beginning of this conversation, right, there's, you know, the fixed supply of 21 million. So there's only a certain amount of people that could have 0.1 Bitcoin or less at this point. Because if you evenly distribute Bitcoin out, right, to the 8 billion people in the world, it's like a little over 200,000 Satoshis right now for each person. So if you have over that, you have more than your fair share, which at this point is like less than $200 or just at $200. So just owning any portion of Bitcoin of this fixed supply, I think at this point is a necessity for people. So even though I do think we are still very early, have you seen just like a more of a, I guess, an openness to people into Bitcoin? Or do you still think that, you know, we're still just getting maybe more people crypto curious, or do you see like an increase in the traction, so to speak, of people who are interested or at least like coming to try to get educated on Bitcoin going forward? Or is there still a lot of resistance? Because I know you're keeping the receipts for Jots, which I love, yeah. Dude. But
there's definitely a lot more people who are interested. But the only thing is, I feel like a lot of people are falling for the trap that they should buy like this other shit coin, altcoin, because it's cheaper and they can get more of it. I don't want people to fall for that trap. That's the most difficult trap to fall to come out of. Once you fall for that trap, you're not going to be able to get out of it, because you're going to be stuck. You're going to have this bias that, oh, I bought this coin. It needs to go up. It has to go up. I personally start like, and I don't know if a lot of people know this. I don't even know if you know this, but I started with a diversified portfolio of shit coins before. I had Cardano, I had Ethereum, I had this coin called Curve, I had this other one called, I had a lot of shit coins before. And I don't want people to fall for that, because I saw it wasted my time. I saw my portfolio decrease in value in terms of Bitcoin because of these shit coins. And if I hadn't held those shit coins, I would have probably had a lot more Bitcoin now, because I sold all those shit coins, by the time I sold them, I mean, my portfolio had already lost in terms of Bitcoin. So what I would say is, be curious about this thing. Try to read something like the Bitcoin Standard. There's the Price of Tomorrow. There's the Big Print, Larry Lepard, Nick Bhatia's Layered Money, There's Broken Money by Lynn Alden. There's so many great books, and understanding what Bitcoin is, even listening to podcasts, this is so valuable because I got a lot of my knowledge from other people just talking through whatever is in their mind. And it gives you a different perspective. And a lot of people who are on podcasts, they haven't written their own books. I haven't written my own book. And I'm trying to explain this concept to other people while I'm also learning. So I think just studying it and understanding it, understanding why, let's say, altcoins could fail or why Bitcoin could replace the US dollar as money. I think understanding that is key if you really want to succeed financially. If you stick to the legacy financial system, I think you're setting yourself up, because in the next few years, who owns a lot of stocks? Baby boomers.
Why would you ever hold generational wealth on a piece of paper? It doesn't make sense. You need a foolproof solution, and I've got it for you. You could get this as low as $25, and if you use promo code GreenCandle, you could get 10% off. Being around for 12 years, they've engineered the perfect and most easy to use solution. I've partnered with CryptoSteel to offer for you guys just that. It is the cheapest and most secure way to store your seed phrase. I don't know about you guys, but I don't have too many things where I think one ton is going to fall on this, but it could survive all of that and more. So go to CryptoSteel.com. You can use promo code GreenCandle. You can get 10% off your entire order if you go there today. So go ahead and protect your generational wealth and do it with CryptoSteel. All right, enough from me. Back to the show.
You stick to the legacy financial system, I think you're setting yourself up, because in the next few years, who owns a lot of stocks? Baby boomers. Baby boomers are going to sell their stocks. Maybe they borrow against them. But when they have to pass those on to younger people, let's say those younger people don't want stocks. They want Bitcoin. They want gold, or they want, let's say, altcoins. They're not going to hold on to those stocks. They're going to dump them into the market. So I think that, let's say, millennials, Gen Z, Gen Alpha, Gen Beta, all the generations after millennials, I think they're falling for a trap if they're buying index funds. I don't think that index funds can perform the same way that they did in the past, because in the past, the people who bought index funds, the people who bought real estate, they already own them, and they're going to have to get rid of them to pay for their lifestyle at some point, or they're going to have to borrow against them to pay for their lifestyle, and they maybe won't even be able to handle managing their real estate portfolios or their stock portfolios. They're gonna have to pass them on to their kids, and their kids aren't going to want them. I don't think they are. I think that Bitcoin is such a superior asset that millennials, Gen Z, Gen Alpha, Gen Beta will figure this out, and they'll want to get rid of their legacy assets for Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is such it's a self-sovereign asset. We talked about all the benefits before. You can't change it. You can't steal it from someone. Whereas with stocks, for example, your stocks are kept on a brokerage account. The brokerage owns your assets. They can take them away from you at any time. I used to work at TD Waterhouse, the direct investing brokerage, and I would constantly see people's accounts blocked because they didn't make their payments to the CRA, the tax agency in Canada. So their accounts are blocked, and they have this money sitting in their account, but they can't do anything with it because they haven't paid their tax bill. So why would you want to put yourself in that situation? Why not just own the best asset in the world? If you have these other assets, of course, if you want to keep them, that's perfectly fine. But do whatever you can to accumulate as much Bitcoin as you possibly can.
That's so interesting that they would freeze accounts with money in them when they want money. You know, it's like, wouldn't you think, all right, well, I don't know, maybe force some liquidation or something like that in order to pay the taxes. But I think that's just a story as old as time. And I think the average person just thinks that it won't happen to them. You know, I was in Bitcoin Amsterdam here this past week, and there was actually somebody on stage that right before I was jumping on that said that their bank account in Switzerland, which, you know, historically is, you know, the most free and open banking industry in the world, allegedly, has this person had their bank accounts frozen like three or four separate times in Switzerland. So I think more people are starting to realize that the money in the bank, the money in your brokerage account, you know, when you have that counterparty risk, it's really not your money. And that the only true form of money is Bitcoin in self-custody. Because, I mean, even now I've had Bitcoin, you know, I pay some of my editors and I have some Bitcoin on this hot wallet. And, you know, with the Cloudflare explosion this morning, I actually couldn't access some of my Bitcoin today. So kind of funny story on that. But, you know, I'm not going to out who it was necessarily, because I still think it's a good company and everything's still fine. But at the end of the day, you know, this is why I think just having Bitcoin in self-custody away from any sort of counterparty risks, including, you know, Coinbase's of the world, Kraken's, all of these other guys, I think is extremely important. And I think, you know, once we get over that mental hurdle that it's difficult to hold Bitcoin in self-custody, I think, you know, that's going to be the way. And more people are going to be seeing things that you're pointing out here. And we're just so early.
Yeah, I don't think that everybody can even take self-custody if they wanted, though, because just it's, I don't think most people want to.
Yeah.
First of all, I don't think most people want to have control over their money because they're just worried that, oh, if I lose my 12 words, my Bitcoin's gone. If I break my wallet, my Bitcoin's gone. People, there's this very limited amount of understanding when it comes to Bitcoin. And because of that, partly because of that, I don't think people will want self-custody. And then most people don't really want control over their own life. They're okay with giving their control over to somebody else. And to them, it doesn't really matter. But even then, I think the people who do have Bitcoin in self-custody, they're going to do really well. I think there's probably going to be a lot of trusted third parties that we do have to trust, like layer twos, layer threes. And over time, more reputable layer twos and layer threes will come out. And they'll be the ones that we're going to be using.
Yeah. And I definitely, yeah, I mean, I hear you on that too. I mean, I definitely agree with that point. As much as I try to be a proponent of self-custody, you know, I definitely think that a lot of people, especially like older generations, yeah, you know, they see the iBit products and other things and they want to hold it that way opposed to holding it in self-custody. Because I mean, I've talked to a few actually that have told me like, yeah, I get the whole self-custody thing, but I'm just too old for that. That's you know, their qualm with all that. So it is kind of an interesting development, but, you know, I know we're a little, I guess, quote unquote bearish here, with the short-term price action. And, you had a great talk at the Canadian Bitcoin conference titled, You're Not Bullish Enough. So tell us, dude, why should we, even when we're down in the dumps in this 90K range, why we should still be bullish?
Nothing about Bitcoin has changed. It's just the price. There's still 21 million Bitcoin. There's still a block every, on average, 10 minutes. Nobody can change that. Nobody can make it so that your Bitcoin can be taken out of your wallet without your permission. None of that has changed. The only thing that has changed is the perception of value of Bitcoin. To me, Bitcoin's worth 100, it's worth infinity US dollars. There's no, I have it on my X portfolio, on the bio. One Bitcoin is worth infinity US dollars. So if you get a discount on Bitcoin, then why not buy some, right? But the way that I see it, in 30 years, let's say when Bitcoin is worth $10 million, $20 million, $50 million, whatever it is, I have no idea. At that point, you're not going to be concerned with whether you bought Bitcoin at 90,000 versus 92,000 versus 85,000. You're not going to care. What you're going to care about is the nominal amount of Bitcoin that you have. That's the only thing that's going to matter. If you have one Bitcoin in 30 years, if it's worth, let's say, $50 million, you're not going to wonder, oh, why didn't I wait to buy? Why didn't I wait until it dropped to 40K to buy? You're not going to be thinking that. What you're going to be thinking about is, I have 100 million Satoshis, and this is generational wealth. I can pass this on to my kids. I can pass it on to my grandkids. I've truly changed their lives. That's all you're going to care about. You're not going to care about, oh, I had to spend more or less money. I had to do this and I had to do that. All of that's going to be irrelevant at that point. So stay bearish. I mean, sorry, no, not stay bearish. Stay bullish. Be as bullish as you can, because that's the only way for you to buy it. If you're not bullish, you're not going to want to buy Bitcoin. Yesterday, when Bitcoin was at just under 90K, it dropped just under 90K. And again, keep in mind that this could age very badly. Let's say Bitcoin does go down to 40K, and that's perfectly fine. I'll buy more. But yesterday when it was at 89K, I bought some against my, I didn't want it. It was against my, it was against my emotions. I was thinking, what if it goes lower? What if it goes lower? I don't want to be buying at the top. I don't really want to be buying before the falling knife. It actually gets all the way low, as it can. I don't know where Bitcoin's going to go in the short term, but I went against my emotions. I used my logic to buy as much Bitcoin as I could, and I posted the receipt for the purchase. And I'm happy with doing that because I know in the long term, even if Bitcoin's price does go down to 40K and I bought it 89K, I don't care. It doesn't really matter to me. I don't need that Bitcoin in the short term. I need it in, like, say, the next 20 years, the next 30 years. That's when I'm going to be worried about whether or not I have enough Bitcoin. Today, I'm just stacking as much as I can. It doesn't matter how much I stack. It doesn't matter how much I get. I don't really care. I don't care about the US dollar price of Bitcoin. All I care about is getting as much as I can.
I love it. And I think that's a great place to wrap it all up, dude, because we got to stay bullish in this bearish term, and we'll be buying on the way down as well as buying on the way up. So Rajat, thank you so much for joining. Why don't you tell people where they can find out more about you and the great content you're putting out, brother, because I'm absolutely loving your videos these days. So let them know where they can find them.
I appreciate that. So I have a YouTube channel. You can search for Rajat Soni Finance. You'll find me. I have a private community where I post exclusive content. You can check that out. It's in the link. It's in the description of every single one of my videos. I do one-on-one sessions if anybody wants to talk to me one-on-one. If you have any questions about Bitcoin, about personal finance, a lot of people ask me about. They don't even ask me about Bitcoin that much. A lot of people do ask me about Bitcoin, but a lot of people ask me how I grew my social media presence. And that, if that's what you want to talk to me about, that's perfectly fine. You can book a meeting with me. You can check out my ex, Rajat Soni. You'll find me. Just search for my name. You'll find me. I'm the bald guy with the verified account. Other than that, I don't really post too much more on social media. I used to post on Instagram, but I stopped. I think the best way to reach me, if you really want to have a conversation, is book a one-on-one meeting or join my community.
Yep. And I'll put all that in the show notes, and I can tell that, all right, I can attest this guy's a legend. Saw him a great speech in the Canadian Bitcoin conference. And brother, I hope to see you at some more of these, because I think you need to get not only just the digital presence, but I want to see you more at more of these conferences, speaking the good word, man, because I really appreciate all you do for the space.
I appreciate it. I mean, I think the fact that the CFA Institute investigated me for being too bullish on Bitcoin speaks for itself. I am a permabull. I will always be bullish on Bitcoin. Unless something fundamentally changes, I will always be buying no matter what.
Amen to that, man. I love it. So everybody go check out Rajat. I'll put everything in the show notes. And Rajat, thanks so much, brother.
I appreciate it, Brandon. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you guys all for tuning in to another great episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you found some value in this one, please hit that subscribe button and that like button to help send this one to the masses. And I've got a surprise for you guys. I've got two more episodes that you have the chance to watch here. So go ahead and click one of them, and I'll see you guys all at the next one.